In the 1930s, pulp fiction detective novels featured a character known as the Shadow. These novels were turned into radio dramas in 1937, where the announcer would start each show by saying in an ominous voice, "Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The Shadow knows." The concept of the Shadow was formulated by Carl Jung, the founder of analytical psychology. He defined the Shadow as the unknown dark side of the personality. How does this dark side of our personality unconsciously control us and create negative patterns in our lives? Is it possible that on some level we actually allow this and derive unconscious pleasure from the results? My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, Carolyn Elliott, says that by uncovering, understanding, and embracing these guilty pleasures, we can clear the negative patterns they manifest, including poverty consciousness, toxic relationships, creative blocks, and much more. Carolyn Elliott earned a doctorate in critical and cultural studies from the University of Pennsylvania. She founded the online magazine Witch to give voice to the subtle witching in the world that's not confined to tradition and convention. She's also the creator of a popular online course and an online business helping people achieve dramatic positive changes in their lives through shadow integration practices and applied occult philosophy. Her website is CarolynGraceElliott.com, and she joins me this week to discuss her just-published book, Existential Kink, Unmask Your Shadow, and Embrace Your Power. Please join me in welcoming to Destination Unlimited, Carolyn Elliott. Welcome, Carolyn.
Oh, thank you, Victor. What an introduction. Yes. Hi.
Well, thank you for joining us. And your book is something that I believe our listeners will love because, as I shared with you prior to our starting the show, it's written in a style that's actually speaking to the reader. It's speaking to me. You're not telling me. You're speaking to me and sharing your experience with me in a very open and frank style. So thank you for doing that.
Oh, you are welcome. It's the only way I know how to do it.
There you go. So now let's start with your story and how your path to this work ensued.
Sure. So, wow. Well, when I was in my 20s, I was having a pretty rough time. I was in recovery from a drug and alcohol addiction, going to 12-step meetings, and I was getting my doctorate in critical and cultural studies. And that involves reading a lot of philosophy, a lot of psychology. I think I've read more psychology than many people with psychology degrees. And I spent a lot of time reading Freud and Jung and their followers, Nietzsche. And there's this idea that they have, you know, about the unconscious and about the ways that we repress certain desires that are unacceptable to the ego or to our society into the unconscious, where they there have a powerful effect on our lives. So this was brewing in my mind, along with a lot of law of attraction stuff, because I have always been into metaphysics, always been into prayer and meditation and creating your own reality. But I found myself getting frustrated with a lot of the modern law of attraction teachings because they felt a little bit one-sided to me. Like, they didn't take into account the really, really painful, really, really challenging side of life. So gradually the thought dawned on me one day as I was standing in line at a food bank waiting to get some food because I had finished my PhD program and I was a broke freelance writer. And even though I had been in my PhD program and they gave me a little stipend of about $1,500 a month for years, and even though I had graduated from the program, I still couldn't find a way to make more money than that. It seemed like I had some sort of strange ceiling. So one day, there I was standing in line feeling pretty sorry for myself. It was like freezing cold standing outside. And the thought came into my mind, I wonder if some part of me really actually enjoys this. And that thought, you know, it's a strange thought to have, but it really connected with all of what I had read in, you know, from the founders of psychotherapy and psychoanalysis, with a lot of the law of attraction stuff, where they talk about, you know, what you desire, you receive. And I'd always sort of thought like, oh no, you know, I don't desire this. Why am I having it? But what I gradually realized was that there is a giant part of me that has a desire to experience the sort of scary roller coaster of scarcity with money, for one example, and scarcity of all kinds of things, scarcity of love, scarcity of creativity, and that it's possible to make this desire is usually unconscious, so it usually unconsciously controls my actions, but it's possible to make a desire conscious by giving it lots of approval, lots of love, lots of celebration, and by being willing to deliberately, purposefully feel the unconscious pleasure that I previously had been feeling, to allow that to come to the surface. So I began to work on that with some concentration, both getting in touch with the part of myself that desired that scarcity and all the anxiety of how am I going to pay the rent this month and all of this sense of proving myself. I really secretly enjoyed that too, like I'll pull it off somehow this month. And so I would spend time giving approval to that, and I would notice the sensations in my body that would arise in connection with my anxiety about paying the rent, for example. A psychotherapist, Fritz Perls, said that anxiety is excitement without breath. And he was referring to the way in which we can experience all kinds of sensations as pleasure or as pain, depending on how much approval and how much relaxation we have around them. And, you know, Milton in Paradise Lost said, the mind is its own place and can make a hell of heaven, a heaven of hell. Mm-hmm. You know, and I really think that that's true, that we humans have a lot more agency in how we experience sensation than we usually think. So anyways, I was practicing experiencing these sensations as arousal, which, you know, literally that's like the medical term for when your heart is beating fast and your cheeks are flushed. That's arousal. Even if you experience it as anxiety or pleasure, it's the same thing physiologically. So I would relax into that. And I learned that it was really possible to find that pleasure and let myself experience that pleasure. And fairly soon after I began doing it, my mind just opened up to this whole horizon of creativity and opportunities that had been there all along, but that I was just blind to previously. And in just about a month, I went from, you know, making that small amount with my freelance writing income to making $5,000 a month and $10,000 a month. And a year later, I had created a six-figure online business. And all of that had seemed so impossible and so out of reach. But there it was. There was something shifted in me. So I knew that I was really onto something. And I began coaching people through this process with blocks of their own, and my coaching clients experienced big success with it, and so did people in my online courses. So I started collecting case studies and stories, and basically I've helped thousands of people apply this process to both situations like money scarcity and also romantic patterns and issues with family, issues with health and inspiration. And there's a lot of power to it. So anyways, I feel like I'm rambling right now. So that's my initial bit of story. Let me know if you have any questions, Victor.
No, that was fine. And it wasn't rambling at all. It kind of explained exactly how your path came into fruition. How much of this is a reflection of the way we're wired as children?
Oh, that's an excellent question. So there was a... So I just, before I get into that whole thing, I will say that I tend to approach this from more of a metaphysical kind of hermetic, holistic, even involving past life perspective. But there was a brilliant psychoanalyst named Edmund Bergler, And he had some views that now are outdated, you know, like negative views of homosexuality and things like that. But he had some really brilliant insight into something called psychic masochism, which was a term that Freud had mentioned in his later work that nobody else seemed to really follow up on, but Edmund Bergler did. And he wrote this amazing book, I have it in front of me right here, called The Basic Neurosis. And The Basic Neurosis is all about how the thing in childhood that a lot of this possibly comes from refers to the oral stage. So in Freudian child development, there's the oral stage, there's the, the Oedipal stage, the anal stage, and there are all these rather strange terms referring to how children experience gratification and aggression. So in the oral stage, when children are 1 to 18 months, it's all about, you know, sucking. They want the breast, the bottle, the nipple. They want to receive nourishment. And they get gratification and pleasure just from the act of sucking. Like, I have a 7-month-old daughter, and sometimes even when she's not hungry, she just wants to be on my breast because that's comforting for her. So this idea of gratification and receiving and hunger and taking in. So what happens also during the oral stage, of course, you know, babies get nourished, but they also experience times of frustration. So for example, you know, if my baby is out with my husband and he's driving around and I'm at home and she gets hungry and maybe it's like 10 minutes he has to drive home before she can get back to me and nurse with me. That experience of frustration challenges a child's, what they call in psychoanalysis, idea of omnipotence or megalomania, where the child thinks that it can, that it controls everything, basically.
I have to take a quick break, We'll pick up on this after the break. My guest is Carolyn Elliott. She's the author of Existential Kink, Unmask Your Shadow, and Embrace Your Power. We'll be back with more of Carolyn after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization. Their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Looking for inspiration?
Want to be inspired?
Not sure where to go?
Find Mark and Kim every Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern on Inspired Living.
Topics will elevate consciousness and range from metaphysics to the human and social experience and all things spiritual.
Welcome to an inspired community that offers support, encouragement, and new ways of thinking. You are the inspired and the inspiration.
Tom has been a teacher for over 40 years. One day, I think one of the students had asked the question and he didn't remember the answer. And I also noticed that he was letting his class out earlier than they were supposed to let out. I was really starting to worry.
Levi and I talked about how it would change our lives, but he was there beside me.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week is Carolyn Elliott. She's the author of Existential Kink, Unmask Your Shadow, and Embrace Your Power. At the end of the last segment, Carolyn, you were talking about the oral stage for children and the feeling of omnipotence that children have.
Yes. So in psychoanalytic theory, the idea is that the child's desire to get orally gets frustrated by the mother not always being perfectly available all the time. And this frustration is very, very perplexing to the child because it challenges their whole notion of how the world is and their omnipotence. And so what happens is we get what's called a narcissistic wound. And a narcissistic wound, it just means our idea of ourself has been challenged. It's been wounded by finding out that we're not omnipotent. So the idea is that in order to kind of console ourselves for this wound to our vision of our omnipotence, we actually develop what's called a libidinal attachment to the experience of being frustrated. So that means that on an unconscious level, we learn how to take pleasure in our frustration. Even if we very aggressively protest it, and babies will very aggressively protest being denied bottles or breast, there's still, at an unconscious level, some kind of pleasure that has come in and attached itself to that feeling of being refused and frustrated, and that helps us. It helps us maintain our sense of being of existing, really. It helps us to not feel totally annihilated in the face of frustration. So the idea in the psychoanalytic world is that, and this was Edmund Bergler's hypothesis specifically, and he was a very successful therapist who probably one of the most successful psychoanalysts in terms of treating people and helping them resolve their problems. He was very good, for example, at helping people resolve writer's block, because he pointed out that pretty much every issue that people have is what he called a pseudo-aggressive cover-up. So everything from overeating to smoking to alcoholism to writer's block to impotence to women not being able to have orgasms, all of that is a way of masking the masochistic pleasure. So the idea is that we will unconsciously arrange and seek out situations where we get to be refused, denied, frustrated, and then feel victimized by them. He called this injustice collecting. And I think it's so fascinating because in our current society, the notion of victimhood is very widespread. People on all sides of the political spectrum seem to really delight in seeing themselves as persecuted victims of the other side. And so we have this delight, but we don't want to admit it to ourselves. And to hide it from ourselves, so, you know, we usually like to think that we are good people and we only want good things. Like, I only want success and happiness and love, right? Most of us think that. So anytime that we unconsciously provoke a rejection or a negative response from someone else, we sort of mask that from ourselves and make it seem like, no, you know, it was all an accident. And I'm getting a bit confused here because the psychoanalytic explanation is kind of confusing.
No, not at all. I think you've been very clear on what you were saying. In fact, you were talking about how a lot of the new age and self-help movement, you had quoted someone saying that it's like looking up to the sun, looking at the beautiful light of the sun, but standing in a pile of feces simultaneously.
Yes. Yes, one of my clients said that, and I thought it was brilliant because it's true. It's, you know, here on Earth, we have feces, we have death, we have illness, we have all sorts of atrocities and traumas and painful things that happen. And of course, we have all the beauty, too. But I really, really think, and so this is my theory, this is different than the psychoanalytic theory, my guess about why some part of us enjoys painful circumstances and frustration and scarcity is that we are divine souls who decided to incarnate and come here to this realm of duality because we're interested in all of duality. You know, we're interested in the pain and the rejection and the death and the feces just as much as the sunshine and the flowers and the giggles. You know, it's all fascinating to us. And when we open up to allowing that pleasure to come forward in the darker side of things, and what I think is important to emphasize is when we allow ourselves to feel this pleasure, this doesn't mean that we have to, you know, go out and make things hard for ourselves on purpose or anything like that. It just means we're no longer shaming or feeling bad about ourselves. We're basically saying, like, you know, for example, in my poverty situation, my usual mental dialogue about that was, you know, this is happening because I'm so dumb. I majored in the wrong thing. I should have gotten a better position, blah, 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 all of this stuff. I took it very personally and I felt a lot of shame around my situation. And it was really revelatory for me when I recognized, hey, this isn't happening because there's something bad about me. This isn't happening because it's true or real in a fundamental sense. It's happening because some part of me really, really likes it and finds it to be a fun game. Mm-hmm. And that part of me is my, you know, is my deep power, is my whole soul. So the more I let myself experience that joy, the more I wake up and the more I become, you know, in the words of Carl Jung, individuated. So to shift a bit, Carl Jung also came out of the psychoanalytic circles. So his idea about the personal shadow and the collective shadow is fairly similar to what I was just talking about with Edmund Bergler and Freud, which is that we all have desires that are socially unacceptable. And so we hide them from ourselves so we don't have to, you know, feel like we're in danger of being exiled.
You frequently quote Carl Jung's statement, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will rule your life and you will call it fate. What's your take on that?
Oh, yes. I love that quote so much. It's been a shining beacon to me for years. So my take on that is that until I make my unconscious desires for painful, bad, wrong things conscious, those desires will continue to rule how I interact with the world without me even realizing it. And that will shape my fate. That will shape my opportunities, my relationships, my choices that affect my health, everything, everything. So the more I succeed in making conscious what I had previously repressed, these unconscious desires and enjoyments in taboo, messed up, forbidden things like scarcity, like rejection, like failure, the more buoyant I become and the more in control of my own fate I become. So I have lots of stories about this. I have a story about how it applies to my romantic life and all sorts of things. But I've just found it to be unrelentingly true. And I find it to be true that most people who don't know about this, because even though this was very fundamental to the whole origin of modern therapy and psychology, this knowledge has really not been popularized at all. And I think it has not been popularized because it is very offensive to our ordinary ego minds. Most people don't like to be told, hey, you know, this is happening because some part of you deep down enjoys this. Like, yeah. Most people are like, ew, don't tell me that. That's, how dare you, you know?
In the beginning of Existential Kink, you share the myth of Persephone and Pluto. How does this allegory explain the foundation of your work?
Oh, wonderful question, Victor. Thank you. Yes. So, yes, at the beginning of the book, I share my special version of that mythic story. So in the normal mythic story of Pluto and Persephone, Persephone is the young goddess of springtime. She's the daughter of Demeter, one of the Olympian gods, and she's hanging out in a meadow picking flowers. And one day, the earth just rips open and out of it comes Hades. And he comes up in his scary black chariot and he grabs young Persephone, kidnaps her, takes her down into the underworld, you know, marries her against her will. It's implied that there's rape. Very, very sad story. And then she's down in the underworld. She's trapped. She's being held captive, basically. She eats some pomegranate seeds, which are the food of the underworld. And then, even after her mother manages to come rescue her, she can never return full time to the world of the Olympians because she's eaten the food of the underworld. So now she's sort of doomed to be a prisoner there. So that's the usual version of the story. And I had a series of dreams and inspirations that gave me a different take on it. And that was connected to finding out a piece of historical knowledge, which was that for a long time in Greece, There was no Hades. There was no king of the underworld for thousands of years before anybody talked about Hades or Pluto. They only talked about Kore. So the Kore was the queen of the underworld, a maiden goddess. She was, whole unto herself. And she was the core, the heart of everything. So my version of the story goes a little bit like this. One day, the Kore, the great queen, got bored being totally omnipotent and, being totally surrounded by whatever she wanted all the time. And she got curious about what it would be like to encounter real opposition, to have an experience of duality. So she split herself into two. She split herself into this young, innocent, beautiful girl named Persephone and this scary, evil, nasty man named Pluto. And that's all I'll say for right now, because I think we have a break coming up.
Yes, we do. And we'll continue this wonderful story of Persephone and Pluto after the break. My guest this week, Carolyn Elliott. She's the author of Existential Kink, Unmask Your Shadow and Embrace Your Power. Carolyn, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and this work.
Oh, yes. You can get it at BarnesandNoble.com or Amazon.com or any of your favorite independent booksellers. It officially comes out on March 1st, but I hear that Amazon is already shipping it out. My website is CarolynGraceElliott.com, and there you can go and you can enter your email and get a free guided existential kink meditation and email messages from me.
And we'll be back with more of Carolyn after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Roll up to the Mystical Minds Convention. Step right this way. Coming March 28th and 29th in Newark, California, just south of San Francisco, the first annual Mystical Minds Convention. Founded by Melanie Marquis, Mystical Minds is a new pagan, paranormal, and metaphysical convention created to expand our minds as well as our networks. Enjoy a weekend of fun, learning, and making connections in a comfortable and welcoming space that fosters unity by honoring the diversity of minds, bodies, and spirits. This is Victor the Voice Furman, and I am honored to be a featured presenter and panelist. For more information and to register, visit MysticalMindsConvention.com and roll up for the Mystical Minds Convention. Step right this way.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human. And she's got this little toy she's always playing with, all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese. And guess what? Egg rolls showed up, like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week is Carolyn Elliott. She's the author of Existential Kink, Unmask Your Shadow, and Embrace Your Power. So before the break, you were telling us the story of Persephone and Pluto and how Persephone was actually this unique goddess core, the heart, mm-hmm. and decided she needed to have an experience of what it's like to be in the world of duality. So go ahead and continue.
Yeah, so this is my sort of visionary understanding of it, is that Kore one day decided to split herself into two so she could have an experience of opposition. And instead of just, she was bored with being in control of everything all the time. So she became Persephone, this beautiful, innocent young girl, and Pluto, this evil, nasty, kidnapping man. And she gave herself this experience, this, you know, thrills and chills ride of being kidnapped and separated from her mother and terrified and lost and violated, all of this stuff. And then one day she was eating the underworld food, the pomegranate, which if you look at a pomegranate, you know, it's very reminiscent of wombs and it's a very deep symbol of feminine knowledge. She ate these pomegranate seeds, and as she ate them, she remembered that she had played this game with herself and divided herself in two, and that rather than being an evil torturer, Pluto was actually an amazingly kind lover who had just so faithfully followed out her instructions, even though that made him look evil and horrible and bad, just because she had wanted to have this experience of duality. So I use this allegory as basically a story of the soul. So I think that at some level we have all done this, and that Pluto represents our unconscious divinity. So, you know, it's a common saying in spiritual circles that we all are divine. We all have divinity within us. But I think most of us maybe just accept that intellectually and don't really try to emotionally, physically embody it. Because when you do, it's very challenging for the simple reason that the divine includes lots of scary stuff. You know, if we take if we take all of reality to be permeated by the divine, that includes, you know, sharks and dictators and war and all sorts of scary, harsh things, as well as all of the sunsets and baby giggles and cuddles.
And creation and destruction.
Yes, creation and destruction, Eros and Thanatos, absolutely. So what I think the opportunity of incarnation is, and I think that Carl Jung would have agreed with this, is to practice a kind of alchemical reconciliation of the opposites, where we find it in ourselves to love not just the cuddly, pretty side of reality and of our own souls, but also the actually evil and totally dark and totally scary parts, and understand that they are part of our divine wholeness, and there's no use shaming them. There's no use feeling guilty about them. In fact, the more we shame them, the more unconscious they will be, and the more they come out sideways. So, for example, if you've ever been around somebody who's totally unaware of their own desire for power, that person is a lot more dangerous to be around than somebody who has sort of a mature acceptance of that desire, because that person isn't even aware of the ways that they will try to get power in a situation. So they'll do it in kind of passive-aggressive, underhanded ways. That's just one example off the top of my head. But anyways, going back to the Pluto and Persephone story, I think that we have the opportunity here, as we are incarnated in duality with all of the traumas and the pains that we've had personally and that we see in the world, to really open our hearts to a giant degree, learn to embrace the totality, learn to enjoy all of it, to praise all of it. And as we do that, we come into a condition of wholeness that Jung called individuation. So when we hear the word individual, we usually think of like, oh, a separate person is an individual. But actually the word individual means sort of like indivisible, unable to be divided, whole. So a lot of us walk around with a sort of a divided view of ourselves. Like I said, we like to think that we are good people who only want good stuff. And that's just not true. I like to say there are no good people. There's only whole people. No good people, no bad people, just whole people. And there's people who are more or less aware of their wholeness. And the irony is, the less aware of their wholeness somebody is, the more inclined to act that out in kind of funky ways they tend to be.
And you share the story, or not the story, but the term, the alchemical term, salve et coagula. Please explain to our listeners what that means.
Oh, yes. So I love this term. So salve et coagula. Salve means to dissolve, to take apart. And coagula means to bring together, to coagulate. So the idea with Solvay et Coagula, both in classical mineral and plant alchemy, is you dissolve something and then you put the parts back together again in a new form that's more potent than the original form. And this is an imitation of how things work in nature through evolution. So, and through metamorphosis sometimes in a single cycle. So my favorite example of this from nature is a caterpillar, which will dissolve itself completely in its cocoon into goo, just total goo inside of its cocoon, that's Solvay. And then it will reorganize itself, coagula, into a higher, more evolved, more beautiful form, into the butterfly that eventually emerges from the cocoon. So it's not just recoagulating itself as a caterpillar, it's turning into a butterfly. Mm. So that's the example in nature. And then in alchemy, in plant alchemy, for example, with spagyrics, the alchemist will take a plant, will soak it in alcohol, and that's the usual way that you make an herbal tincture, is you take a plant, you soak it in alcohol. But the spagyric tincture, the alchemical tincture, goes a step further. It, after the plant soaks in alcohol and the alcohol absorbs the essential oils and the alcohols of the plant, they take out the plant matter and they calcinate it, which means they burn it until the plant matter itself is white ash. And then they take that ash and they soak that back into the alcohol for a certain period of time, thus combining all three elements of the plants, its essential oils, its alcohols, and its mineral salts, so the constituent elements of the plant. And that spagyric tincture is much more powerful than a regular herbal tincture, or if you just take the raw plant or take the plant as a tea. Spagyric tinctures tend to pack a real punch. So that's the idea, is you create something more potent, more beautiful out of materials by dissolving and bringing them together again. So likewise in the psyche, and I think it's very amazing that the ancient Greek word psyche actually meant butterfly. Mm. That was their word for butterfly, and it came to be applied to the mind. That our minds, our psyches, that we are like butterflies, and we all have these patterns that we need to dissolve, and we need to liberate ourselves, get gooey, turn into goo, and then reshape ourselves. So existential kink, as I understand it, is primarily a Solvay process. It helps to liberate the erotic, libidinous energy that we've been unknowingly, unconsciously putting into these kind of dark secret enjoyments of frustration or scarcity, to liberate that by making it conscious, by letting ourselves consciously, kinkily enjoy it, just like somebody in a BDSM scene might enjoy their partner, you know, tying them up with fuzzy handcuffs and tickling them or whipping them or whatever the case may be. We let ourselves enjoy the sensation, it becomes conscious, and that's a dissolution, that's a Solvay. And then we have this free energy, all of this energy, this eros that was previously invested in creating this repetitive unconscious pattern, like only being able to make a certain amount of money each month, like falling for the same kind of jerk over and over again. It's liberated now, and now we can use the classical techniques of magic, visualization, you know, making vision boards, spell casting, affirmations, whatever we like, to coagulate that energy and use it to go to a higher level, to create something new and fresh in our lives. And I think it's interesting because I think most of what's been popularized in metaphysical practice for a while has been just coagula practices, you know, creative visualization, law of attraction, affirmations, things like that. And I think the focus tends to really skip this very necessary first part of the Solvay, where we liberate energy that can be used to create the new, more evolved vision.
So kink, then, is a metaphor.
It is. Yes, it is a metaphor. So it's a metaphor that's based on, as I was saying, the very literal notion that in the world of BDSM, which means bondage, dominance, sadism, masochism, all sorts of things.
All that kinky stuff.
All that kinky stuff. You know, it exists all around the world. And what people do in those communities is they set up very deliberate consensual containers and agreements for various scenes that they're going to play out. And so somebody might say, you know, I want you to tie me up and hit me with this flogger, and my safe word will be red. Oh, and I'll wrap up because I think we need a break right now.
That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, go ahead, finish your thought. That's good.
Oh, I have a few minutes? Okay.
Yeah, you have so 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Red. and that will be the container for the scene. So it's a contained, agreed upon, consensual situation. And the thing is that life is not there. It seems like we never consented to it, or we don't remember consenting to it. It's like a big BDSM scene with lots of bondage and sadism and masochism all around, but it seems like there's no container. So usually we're not able to enjoy it like people participating in those deliberate containers are. So the thing is with the existential kink meditation practice, we learn to give a container for ourselves to practice deliberately enjoying it.
And we're giving ourselves the safe word. My guest is Carolyn Elliott. Her book, Existential Kink. We'll be back with more of Carolyn after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the OM Times Experts program. With OM Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living. A chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
1 in 3 adults has prediabetes. That means it could be you, your best man, your worst man. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org to know where you stand. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week is Carolyn Elliott. She's the author of Existential Kink, Unmask Your Shadow, and Embrace Your Power. You say that desire evolves through fulfillment, not denial and repression. What does that mean?
Yes, beautiful question. So my notion with that is that, as I've mentioned, we all have these kind of repressed desires for quote-unquote bad things like scarcity, like rejection, like refusal, basically any negative experience that we've had in our lives has some unconscious desire and pleasure in it. And, you know, the tendency is to think like, oh, well, if I have this desire in me somewhere, I just need to keep it, maybe I should just keep rejecting it or keep ignoring it. Or, you know, maybe if I have some bad desire, yeah, the best thing to do is forget about it. But actually, desires evolve through being fulfilled, not through being ignored and rejected. So one of the ways this works is if we allow ourselves to become conscious, as I did. I allowed myself to become conscious of my previously unconscious pleasure in scarcity and anxiety about paying the rent. As that pleasure became conscious, that desire got to be consciously, deliberately fulfilled, which means it didn't have to keep trying to fulfill itself. Instead, I was like, actually, you know, I let it consciously connect with the fact that we've got it. We've got all this scarcity right here. We have this low bank account. We did it. We won. And really got on the side of my shadow and let her enjoy that success consciously, deliberately. And after that happened, you know, since then, I have not had that pattern. Like, it's just not been a part of me anymore, because I like to think the desire was satisfied. Likewise, I was once in a very controlling, jealous relationship with a physically abusive guy, and I kept thinking to myself, oh my gosh, this is so awful. I hate this. He's so controlling. And it was like, as long as I thought that I hated it and that his behavior meant something about me, like, oh, how terrible I am, I've gotten myself into this situation, I, you know, all of this stuff, I couldn't seem to get out of it. I would break up with the guy, and then I'd call him the next day, and he'd come over, and we'd be yelling at each other again, and just over and over. And finally, one day, I was like, well, you know, I'll apply this process to my romantic situation, too. And I realized, oh, wow, you know what? It's not true that I completely hate this controllingness. There's a part of me that just loves it. I love feeling like I'm so important. He just has to control me. And I let myself, again, consciously experience that pleasure physically in my body, head to toe. And it was a fulfillment. And as soon as I let that fulfillment become conscious, I lost the desire to be in that relationship. And I left and I went to the other side of the world. I went and I lived in Indonesia for a year. And I had the power to walk away, which previously I didn't have. And that's a well-known phenomenon with women in abusive relationships, is they can find it very hard to leave. And it seems mysterious to the people around them, like, why doesn't she just get rid of this guy? There's like, you know, this deep unconscious pull there. And so I really want the world to know this, is that it's possible to get free of that kind of unconscious hook that keeps you in negative patterns and even really dangerous things like abusive relationships, just by letting yourself consciously, shamelessly, guiltlessly feel that underlying pleasure that's there. It's just part of your humanity, and you don't have to feel terrible about it. You just let yourself experience it, and then you can feel free and move on.
So much of what people suppress in their darker sides is because they feel it's shameful or wrong.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And I guess I have this deep thing where I hope that nobody ever feels shame ever. And sometimes when people hear me say that, they're like, well, what do you mean, Carolyn? What about child molesters or murderers? Shouldn't they feel ashamed of themselves? And for me, no. I mean, maybe they should be locked away from society and everything, but in terms of shame is a feeling that creates alienation, which makes it easier to harm others. Shame doesn't prevent harming others. It makes it more likely, because it's a feeling that shuts down our normal heart's ability to connect and makes it so that we need, you know, some sort of intense interaction, even violent interaction, in order to feel anything at all. So shame is a kind of numbing agent. And so it's my desire that nobody feel shame or guilt ever, not even the worst criminals, because it doesn't do anything. I mean, if feeling shame and guilt prevented atrocity from happening, we would all be living in the Garden of Eden again. It just doesn't.
Absolutely. You talk about God self kink. What does that mean?
Oh, yes. So that term came to me when I was thinking about the Vedas. And in the Vedas, there's a lot of discussion about how Brahman and Atman are one. So the giant God and the individual personal soul are the same. And Alan Watts, the wonderful British philosopher, said that, you know, this is describing a version of the world where God is constantly playing hide and seek with God's self. So God is, you know, pretending to be the taxi driver and the mailman and the wife and the kids and everybody. You know, we're all just God. We're the tiger and the turtles. We're Donald Trump and we're, you know, everybody is God. And we're just playing this game of hide and seek. And the fun is in waking up and realizing, finding yourself and realizing, wow, I'm God too. And so are they. And that's the fun of the game. And I was thinking about this one day and I got to think, wow, like God is a really kinky person. I mean, look at what we've got going on here. All of this war and rape and abuse and trauma. This is some very, very edgy, very, very dark stuff. And it occurred to me that it's still part of the joy of playing hide and seek. And that can be very hard to take in from our human kind of relative point of view, where we don't like to see anybody suffer. It's very sad. It's heartbreaking. But there's a certain way in which divinity is still at play, even in these very dark things. And I like to think that God is kinkily enjoying it, just like somebody in a BDSM dungeon is enjoying being tied up and whipped, because God knows it's a game. The divine knows it's a game and knows that it's not defined by what happens here in this world of duality. So yes, there's that.
What is the existential kink process?
So the existential kink meditation itself is fairly simple. I can describe it to you right now. It's you basically just create a container for yourself, which means like some time set aside to relax in private. So I like to recommend setting a timer for 15 minutes and maybe lighting a candle or some incense, because that helps, you know, as you do that over time, that can help the mind relax and get into the mood to do this. And just, you know, say to yourself, okay, choose some situation in your life that you don't like, just like I didn't like my controlling relationship or my being broke. And say to yourself, you know, just for this amount of time, I'm going to relax my ego and all of my protestations about how much I hate this and how much this sucks. And I'm just going to let whatever part of me might desire or enjoy this sensation come to the forefront. I'm just going to welcome this part of me, understand that it's allowed to be here. It's a beautiful part of me. It's just as beautiful and just as important as the part of me that likes sunshine and roses and good food. I let that part of me come up. And so that's the first part, is relaxing and seeing if you can get in touch with the desire. And sometimes you can feel it very distinctly and sometimes no. But even if not, you can still go on to the next part, which is basically also experimenting with the sensations in your body. So you kind of, you think of the situation that you don't like, you know, so I would bring to mind, like I mentioned, these sensations of my heart pounding and my cheeks flushing in connection with my anxiety about how am I going to pay the rent this month? I don't know. My freelance work isn't going to cover it. What am I going to do? What if my roommates kick me out? Letting those sensations be present in my body. And letting them be present non-judgmentally, which just means, you know, not interpreting them as, not labeling them as, oh, this is my fear, this is my anxiety. Just letting them be there as sensations. And experimentally saying to myself, you know, can I let myself feel pleasure in these sensations? And, you know, sometimes I'm able to, sometimes I'm not, but that's why it's a practice, it's a meditation like anything else. And the thing is it can take weeks or it can take months to give oneself enough internal permission to set aside the shame and the guilt. And so that's why in the book I talk about using EK statements, which are sort of like affirmations, to assure oneself, you know, like, it's all right to experience pleasure in everything in life. I'm an eternal soul and I came here for all of this, not just the shiny, nice parts. I'm allowed to feel all of the pleasure that's here.
You have a number of wonderful exercises in the book that go and enhance that concept you just discussed. What would you like readers to take away from Existential Kink?
Oh, wow. I would like them to take away the notion that it's really, truly okay to enjoy every experience, even things like scarcity and rejection and frustration. You can let yourself have those sensations, and it doesn't mean anything bad about you. In fact, it means that you're waking up into your wholeness, and it's possible to change any negative pattern in your life and recreate it through these principles of alchemy. And yes, life is pretty good.
So it's all about transmuting the lead into the gold.
Yes.
Wonderful. Thank you, Carolyn Elliott. My guest, Carolyn Elliott, she's the author of Existential Kink, Unmask Your Shadow and Embrace Your Power. Carolyn, one more time, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and your work.
Absolutely. So you can get my book at any major retailer, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, indie publishers, independent bookstores have it. And you can go to my website, which is www.carolyngraceelliott.com. Elliott has two L's and two T's. And there you can enter your email address, and I will send you a free guided existential kink meditation, and you'll also get email messages from me that help you explore the ideas in the book. And you can get notified about my courses and my classes that I offer online, where I have these guided communities where we do live Q&As and workshops, and you can get community support in doing this practice, which is very, very helpful because it's a strange practice. And if you don't have a community around you, it can be harder to hold the newness of the ideas.
But the message is so important for so many. Thank you, Carolyn Elliott, for joining us.
Thank you, Victor.
And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor, the voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.